Ashto Tarasata Shishi Madhista Vangarishta Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thako Maharajaki Ananta Koti Vaishnamindiki Nama Charja Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Brimsa Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Susari Kaur Bhakti Vindiki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopavinda Shamakund Radha Kundiri Govaraniki Braj Bhumi Shivan Dhamma Dhammaki Navadip Mayapur Dhammaki Purushottam Chetra Jagannath Puri Dhammaki Ganga Mayaki Yamuna Mayaki Bhakti Deviki Tulasi Maharani Ki Samaveta Bhakti Vrindaki Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gopre Manandi. Oh, glorious the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the Lord's feet of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shri Vat Sankham Ghana Shyamam. Shri Vat Sankham Ghana Shyamam. Shri Vat Sankham Ghana Shyamam. Purusham Vana Malinam. Purusham Vana Malinam. Purusham Vana Malinam. Shri Vat Sankham Ghana Shyamam. Purusham Vana Malinam. Shankha Chakra Gada Padmaya. Shankha Chakra Gada Padmaya. Shankha Chakra Gada Padmaya. Abhivyakta Chatubhujam. Abhivyakta Chatabhujam. Abhivyakta Chatabhujam. Shankha Chakra Gada Padmaya. Abhivyakta Chaturbhujam. Sri Vat Sankham Ghana Shyamam. Purusham Vana Malinam. Shankha Chakra Gada Padmaya. Abhivyakta Chaturbhujam. Sri Vat Sankham Ghana Shyamam. Purusham Vana Malinam. Shankha Chakra Gada Padmaya. Abhivyakta Chaturbhujam.
Thank you.
Srivatsa Ankam. The mark of Srivatsa on the chest of the Lord. Kana Shamam. Deeply bluish. Purusham. The Supreme Person. Vana Malinam. With a garland of flowers. Shankha, conch shell. Chakra, wheel. Gada, club. Padmai, lotus flower. Abhivyakta, manifested. Chaturbhujam, four-handed. Translation. The Lord is further described as having the mark of Srivatsa, or the sitting place of the goddess of fortune, and his bodily hue is deep bluish. The Lord is a person. He wears a garland of flowers, and he is eternally manifest with four hands, which hold, beginning from lower left hand, a conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. Responsively pleased. The Lord is further described as having the mark of Srivatsa, or the sitting place of the goddess of fortune, and his bodily hue is deep bluish. The Lord is a person. He wears a garland of flowers, and he is eternally manifest with four hands, which hold, beginning from the lower left hand, a conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. So here it's continuing the description of the Lord's form. And this is, obviously, this is an Aishvarya description. And we see that this is quite similar. Obviously, descriptions vary, but this is quite similar to what we find in many other places in the Bhagavatam. Notably, there's the song sung by Lord Shiva to the Prachetas. He's also describing the beautiful form of the Lord. And many, many notable descriptions are given there. One that sticks in my mind from the song of Pracheta, the song of Lord Shiva to the Prachetas, is he describes how the Lord's body, it glistens just like a drop of rain that's hanging on a leaf, and just, you know, you see when the light hits the drop of rain and how it shines. So the Lord's body shines like that. But actually, these descriptions are completely inadequate to describe the beauty of Krishna. Listening to Rajendranandan Prabhu's class the other day, and I was getting some idea of the nature of the Lord and how it is actually impossible to conceive of the Lord's body with mundane senses, or of the Lord's form. There's that verse Prabhu was quoting, Atasi Krishna Namadi Navavid Krayam Indriyai Sevan Mukhihi Jivaro Swayame Vesparatya Daha. That it's not possible to understand the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord with materially contaminated senses. But factually, it's only possible to understand these things when we become purified. And here, it's being described the process of meditation. which is a perfect means to purify the senses. In the 10th chapter of the Nectar of Devotion, there's a section on meditation. I've forgotten the title of the chapter, but there's a section there on meditation. And Rupa Goswami is quoting from various sources, the Vishnu Dharmakta and the Padma Purana, and is talking about the benefits of meditation. And in there, it describes how all one's sinful activity, one becomes purified of the effect of all sinful activities. And in this purified state, one's actually able to perform devotional service. And it goes on to explain how one can achieve the kingdom of God through the process of meditation. And then it goes on to describe a very nice pastime. I'm sure we're all familiar with the pastime of the Brahmin and the sweet rice. So it describes this pastime. And this is also pointing out the benefits of meditation, because this Brahmana, even though he had no material resources at all, he had heard how one could worship the Lord in the mind. So he practiced worshiping the Lord in the mind. And then it's described there how, because the Lord is present within the heart, he's able to accept that worship. And through the process of worship, one in the mind, or through this process of meditation, he was actually directly able to directly exchange or directly interact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the process of meditation. So it's a very, very important process. And again, in Rajendranandabhu's class, he spoke about three particular topics. And the last topic that you spoke about was deity worship. I was kind of hoping you're going to speak a little bit more about that. I have a particular interest in that topic. And see, what's being described here is actually the process of deity worship. If we go back to maybe about verse 43 or so. Yeah, verse 43. It's starting off Narad Muni, and it's interesting. It is Narad Muni, and actually he's the one person who's given, you know, particularly given the process of deity worship in his Narad Pancharatra, etc. But it's describing there how, you know, or even further back, you go to verse 42, you know, it tells him to go to Vrindavan, to go to a holy place, because a holy place is a very, very favorable place for the practice of devotional service. And we understand that the various scriptures and mentions how devotional activities done in the Dharma are magnified 1,000 times. So the Dharma is a very, very favorable place for the practice of devotional service. And even in a, particularly in a place like Sridhar Mayapur, you know, it's every activity we do in Mayapur is directing us towards Krishna consciousness. Of course, if we perform simple activities, that's not helpful. But, you know, it's described that how even if you lie down in the Dharma, it's considered if you're paying obeisance. There's so many different dispensations are given there for the practitioner of devotional service to make rapid spiritual advancement. So Narad Muni here is instructing Dhruva Maharaj to go to the Dharma and perform devotional service. And then he says you take bath 3 times a day. So this is the beginning. The process of deity worship involves various stages of purification, going from the gross to the subtle to the spiritual. And this is in a broad description here that Narad Muni is telling Dhruva Maharaj the same thing. And he tells him you take bath, then you sit down and you perform various purificatory rites, you know, to purify the gross external body. And then when your body becomes purified, then you start to fix your mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you become fixed in this meditation. And in the process of deity worship, the same description is given there. We perform there's different descriptions. The Sri Vaishnavas describe it as abhigamana. I've forgotten the descriptions, but ija, swadhyaya, abhigamana. And I can't remember the other two, but you know, it's basically preparing in the morning, meaning, you know, you have clean clothes, you go to bed at a proper time, you wake up at a proper time, you take a bath. All these things are aimed at trying to bring the consciousness under control. This is why we take bath. You know, it's recommended to take a cool bath, because it helps to, especially if one's had disturbing dreams, then it helps to flush out these things from the consciousness. You know? Then one puts on clean clothes, one may chant various mantras. You know, different devotees still chant mantras when they wake up in the morning. Jayati, Jayati, Jalini Vasol, things like that are recommended. And then with the vision to steadying the consciousness, steadying the mind. What's the purpose of that? The purpose of that is so we can focus upon Krishna. And this is what Narad Muni is guiding Dhruva Maharaj to do here, is to steady the consciousness for the purpose of focusing on Krishna. And it's interesting because he's, you know, the way this chapter evolves is in the beginning of the chapter, Maitreya Rishi, he's explaining to Vidura the various inauspicious descendants of Lord Brahma. You know, death and, you know, harsh speech and this one and that one, all these, you know, real pleasant personalities you wouldn't want to really meet on a dark night. And so he's describing all these persons. And then Prabhupada points out in a purport that he very purposefully starts to describe pious persons. And he goes directly to Dhruva. He doesn't worry about describing the descendants of Priyavrata Maharaj, who is the older brother of Uttanapad. He doesn't worry so much about describing Uttanapad, but he goes directly to Dhruva. And Prabhupada points out there's a specific reason. It's because the pious activities of Dhruva Maharaj are very, very auspicious, and they're very, very inspiring. And he's saying that actually, by hearing about, you know, the austerities and the penances performed by Dhruva Maharaj, then one can become inspired in devotional service and see how Dhruva achieved success. You know, even though he approached Krishna with a very, very materialistic sort of motive, yeah, he wanted to, you know, basically he wanted to smash his mother-in-law, he wanted to kill his brother, and he wanted to take over the kingdom. You know, he's actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura, in his comments, he points out how Dhruva is saying that she's a vile woman, you know, and my father's also a vile person because he's under her sway. You know, so he was pretty fried with him, basically. And he had this very, very strong material motive how he wanted to take over the kingdom and destroy them all and have a kingdom actually greater than the kingdom of Lord Brahma. And through this endeavor, you know, and fortunately, actually, it's interesting because his stepmother, Saruchi, she actually had very strong material motives, and she was quite a proud person. And in front of her husband, she's saying, how, you know, he likes me better than the other woman and this and that, and you know, very, very proud. And actually the only way that you're ever going to achieve this kingdom is if you die and then you're born out of my womb. So better you go and perform austerities to Krishna and get the chance to take birth in my womb. And it's kind of interesting because, like, she's instructing him to worship the Lord for some material gain. But actually what's available through the process of devotional service is so superior. And Prabhupada makes the point, it's a very interesting point, that, you know, like, if he performed, you know, say, you know, the types of things she's encouraging him to do are available through Karmakanda activities. You can get, you know, this great kingdom, etc., you know, wealth, whatever you like, through from performing Karmakanda activities. Yet, a five-year-old child is not capable of performing Karmakanda. You know, you need to have certain qualifications. So Prabhupada points out that only through the process of bhakti, because with bhakti there's no limitations, there's no, you know, just like Lord Chaitanya points out, there's no rules and regulations in the chanting of Hare Krishna. Anyone can chant Hare Krishna any time, place or circumstance. Just like we see the past time when Lord Chaitanya was, you know, he was trying to stop chanting, he was biting his tongue. And then Gopal Guru, who was a young boy at the time, was asking him, well, his actual name was Gopal at that time, was asking him, why are you biting your tongue? He says, because when I'm going to the bathroom, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, and my tongue won't stop. I can't stop my tongue. So I bite my tongue to stop it from chanting. And then Gopal, he pointed out, he said, but my Lord, the chanting of Hare Krishna is not bound by rules and regulations. You can chant at any time, place, or circumstance. And then Lord Chaitanya says, oh, you are my guru. Now you should be called Gopal Guru because this is correct. So he points out how the process of devotional service is not limited by any external material thing. You know, it's not bound by these things. So for this reason that a five-year-old boy, Dhruva, was able to practice devotional service and achieve perfection. So Prabhupada points out how this is very, very inspiring for devotees. And by hearing these pastimes, by hearing about the austerities of Dhruva, and by hearing how he achieved these things, we can become inspired in our practices of devotional service. And you know, even though Dhruva had very strong material motives to begin with, it doesn't really matter because he actually followed the right path. You know, even though his stepmother, Saruchi, who wasn't devotionally inclined at all, Prabhupada says that very clearly. You know, she was trying to demonstrate to Uttanapada how devoted she was, but Prabhupada plainly says she was not a devotee, she had no devotion. It was just pride that was motivating her. because he was trying to show how good she was. Yet his mother, Suniti, was quite a different personality, because she was saying to him, you know, don't worry about these things. You know, okay, they've insulted you, this thing, that thing. Don't worry about it. This is all external. And it's kind of interesting, because it's quite similar to the way that Jad Bharat responded when, was it Rahugana, was chastising him? Saying, oh, you know, you're this, you're that. And he's saying, actually, it's a fact. This is what I am. But I'm not this body, so it doesn't really matter anyhow. Of course, Dhruva wasn't quite on the same level as that. And whether it was out of humility or whether it was out of reality, when Narad Muni was giving instructions on actually, you should go home because, you know, this is very, very difficult. And, you know, it's not really the right place for you in the forest and that. And he just said to Narad Muni, I can't follow your instructions. I'm really cheesed off with these guys and I'm going to get them. You know, really, I've been offended. But his mother pointed out that you know what they're saying is correct, and the process devotion service is actually the, I can't help you, you know, I'm also upset, I'm crying tears also because of what she said, I've been hurt by this, but by taking shelter of Krishna, he can help you. And this point is confirmed in the third chapter of the second canto of the Bhagavatam, where it says, Akama, Savakama, Va, Moksha Kama, that whether we're full of material desires, or without material desires, or we desire liberation, one should by all means, this word tibra is very interesting because it means forcefully, with great enthusiasm, with great strength, one should take shelter, one should tibrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Then one will achieve, yajeta, one will get this great perfection. So we see that's exactly what Dhruva Maharaj did. That he didn't just sort of, you know, haphazardly or lackadaisically practice devotional service. He performed tibra bhakti with great enthusiasm, with great strength, and actually achieved very quickly, you know, the success of his practices. Within 6 months, he actually saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's quite remarkable. So we can understand the effect of receiving instructions from Narad Muni is also very significant. You know, because Narad Muni himself is one of the Mahajans. Narad Muni is a person who's directly having darshan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Narad Muni has instructed so many great personalities in the process of devotional service and guided them to their perfection. So, of course, there is the benefit of receiving instruction from a personality like Narad Muni. This actually had a great effect in assisting Dhruva to achieve his goal. But also, the determination of the practitioner. If he hadn't have been practicing his Tirtha Bhakti with his great force, practicing devotional service, he wouldn't have been able to achieve the goal. So there's many things that are required there in order for one to achieve success. So by his great endeavor, we see that Dhruva achieved success in devotional service, and actually he was able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. And this came about through the process of deity worship, essentially, because we see here Narad Muni, he instructs him how to be clean, he instructs him how to, you know, perform gross purifications and stuff like that, and then he goes on to meditation. Meditation is preparation. We start off by meditating upon the place where the Supreme Personality of God is situated, the Dham. There's very, very beautiful descriptions. There's one, we've been working on a course that Shamasun Nanda Prabhu is going to teach about mantras. And we're having this discussion about whether to teach Vrindavan Dhyan mantra or not, because it's quite a long mantra. It's 7 verses. And but just like reading through the description there of how, you know, it describes the Jamuna, it describes Govardhan, there's so many beautiful aspects of Vrindavan. And even when Prabhupada was teaching Jamuna deity worship, he was instructing her in deity worship, and he was instructing her about Manasa Puja, about meditation. And he said that when you collect the waters, you know, when you collect water for bathing the deity, you meditate that you're going down to the Jamuna River and you have a golden pot and it's all encrusted with jewels and that, and you're collecting water from the Jamuna for bathing the deity. And Jamuna Maharaj said, I don't know what the Jamuna looks like. I've never been there. So then Prabhupada described to her what the Jamuna was like. So the idea is to like, in our consciousness, we fix what this... The place, you know, there's beautiful descriptions, fix the place in our mind. And then after we become fixed, then we meditate upon the form of the deity we're worshipping in that place. And then we worship, when our mind is fixed on that form, then we worship that personality. And through that meditation, and it's actually described by Sanatana Goswami that the meditation cannot be broken. It's actually a great offense to break the meditation. So if we're doing Manasa Puja, we need to be in a place where we're not going to be disturbed. And through the different benefits from this meditation, one of the significant benefits is that one actually understands, one actually realizes that the deity is that person we're meditating on. We actually develop this personal concept. And that's a very important word that's being mentioned here in this verse. It says Purusham. And then Prabhupada translates that the Lord is a person. Which is a very, very important aspect of deity worship, a very, very important aspect of meditation, is to understand that this is, you know, as we see there's that verse, Patima Nahitumi Shakshapandanda, my dear Lord, you're not a statue, you're directly the son of Nanda Maharaj Krishna. So if we can develop that understanding, if we can develop that understanding that Krishna is directly a person, he's standing here before me in this form, as you were mentioning the other day. There's five forms, five incarnations and five manifestations of Krishna in this world. There's Pada, the Vyuha, Vaibhav, Antaryami, and Archa. The Archa is actually one of the incarnations of Krishna that comes in this world. So we need to understand this point, that the deity is directly Krishna. You know, that verse, Patima Nahi Tumi Shaksha Pravendanandana, that he says, my dear Lord, you're not a statue. This, you know, these two Brahmins, when they're traveling around India, the story of Sakshi Gopal. So when he went back to Vrindavan, the young Brahmin, when he went back to Brahman, to Vrindavan, and he was talking to the deity, and Gopal, he says, but I can't walk, I'm a deity. And then he said to him, he said, my dear Lord, you're not a statue. You're directly the son of Nanda Maharaj Krishna. So if you can talk, you can walk. Let's go. So he, you know, through his conviction that this was directly Krishna, then the deity walked from one side of India to the other. Of course, there's different versions of this, but you know, our understanding is he walked to Ramuna in Orissa. So we can see that the benefit or the effect that is there when we have that conviction that we're dealing directly with Krishna. And we see even a young boy like Dhruva, because of his conviction, Raghunandan Thakur, the same thing, you know, 5 years old, because of his conviction that Krishna was the deity, because of his conviction of the instructions of his father, that he actually achieved the success of the process of devotional service very, very quickly, so much so that Krishna came off the altar and ate everything he was offering him. So, you know, in one sense, devotional service is difficult. This is the point that the Narad Muni makes to Dhruva earlier on, is the difficulty of achieving the success of devotional service. Yet, if one has the determination, if one has the conviction that this is Krishna directly, if we have this unflinching faith, as it was that Yasya Deva Para Bhakti, Yatta Deva Tathavaro Tashati, Yatta Prakashanti Mahatma, but if one has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord and the instruction of the spiritual master, then very quickly one achieves the success in devotional service. And it's not so difficult to understand why we achieve it quickly, because actually this is our constitutional position. Prabhupada points out, he says, quotes the Vedic aphorism, asango hi ayam purusha, that the nature of the jiva is the, you know, where the jiva is a transcendental being. We cannot actually become affected by this asango. We cannot come in association with the material nature. It cannot touch us. That's why, and Prabhupada says, it's just like you see these Western boys and girls, they're very quickly, they come to the process of devotional service, very quickly they become bright-faced and effulgent. And this is the nature of the process of devotional service. It actually removes all these anarthas very, very quickly. And one becomes, as it points out earlier on in this section of the Bhagavatam, one becomes enlivened and becomes freed from these inauspicious things. And this is the nature of the process of devotional service. So, and it's also the nature of the process of deity worship, that if we have this determination that this is directly Krishna and I'm worshipping him, and we deal with the deity in that way, then very quickly he will reveal this reality to us. The more we're able to deal with Krishna as a person, the more we'll realize it. You know, but if we deal with the deity as a statue, then he will forever remain a statue to us. And Bhaktisiddhanta, he pointed this, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he pointed this out one time. He was giving class, and some of his disciples, they got up to, you know, the darshan came, and they got up to go and see the deity. And he said, for them, the deity will always remain stone. And you can see this, you know, I've seen so many places where people are worshipping the deity, and you see the way they're worshipping the deity, and you can understand for them, the deity is always going to be a stone, because they're not dealing with the deity as a person. They don't care about scratching the deity with the pins, they don't care about knocking the deity, they don't care if the deity falls over. You know, I've seen many different things, I've heard many different things, and we can understand that for these devotees, it's going to be difficult, because they have this impersonal, you know, approach. Yet if we can take up the personal approach, if we can understand how Krishna is present before us directly as a person, and he's just, you know, eager to reciprocate with us, he's eager, he has this compassionate nature, he wants us to see that personality. If we can understand this and worship in that way, then we'll get the benefit of the process of devotional service. As we see here, Dhruva, you know, he you know, and Narada Muni is describing this wonderful form of the Lord, this form of Vishnu. And Dhruva meditates upon that. He fixes that form. And that's the point of meditation. We have to fix the form of the Lord in the mind before we start the worship. And because he fixes that form clearly in his mind, he fixes this personal form of Krishna clearly in his mind, then Dhruva becomes enlivened by this process. And he quickly realizes Krishna, this very form that he's meditating upon. And in that way he achieves perfection. So I'll read the purport. Here in this verse, the word Purusham is very significant. The Lord is never female. He is always male, Purusham. Therefore, the impersonalist who imagines that the Lord's form is that of a woman is mistaken. The Lord appears in a female form if necessary, but his perpetual form is a Purusha, because he is originally male. The feminine feature of the Lord is displayed by the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, Radharani, Sita, etc. All these goddesses of fortune are servitors of the Lord. They are not the supreme, as falsely imagined by the impersonalist. And there's an interesting verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the purport on that verse is really, really interesting. Ekala Isha Krishna Ada Sabhivrita. And that's in the fifth chapter of the Adi Lila. And then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how Krishna is the only master. Every other form is a servitor, even Balarama, because that chapter is actually the glories of Nityananda Ram. And describes how Balarama, the Purushavatars, all the different forms of Krishna, all the different incarnations of Krishna, actually take the form of servitor. Only Krishna is the master. Ekale Ishvara Krishna. Ara Sabhya. He's the only master. Everyone else, so that Lakshmi and Radharani take the form of servitor, is not surprising. Lord Krishna in his Narayan feature is always four-handed. On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Arjuna wanted to see his universal form, he showed his feature as four-handed Narayan. Some devotees are of the opinion that Krishna is an incarnation of Narayan, but the Bhagavata school says that Narayan is a manifestation of Krishna. Any comments at all on that? Questions? Yeah. I don't know so much about the six deities that were installed or where they are now. I'm not sure if there's any information about that. I mean, yeah, I've taken darshan of that deity. There's Braj Mohan there. There's also at Radha Gokulananda, there's a deity of don't know which deity it is there, but there's a deity of Narottamdas Thakur there also. I'd rather go from the Nanda temple. The Goswami temple. You know, just down the road from Radharaman. Yeah, the Vishnacharamrita Thakur's deity. And there's a deity of Narottam, deity worshipped by Narottamdas Thakur. There's also, yeah, maybe it's Radhakanta. My memory's not that good. And the deity of Lokanath Goswami is also there. I just don't know so much about those deities that he installed in Katuri. But I was reflecting on some of the different pastimes of Narottamdas Thakur this morning. It's quite extraordinary because you know, he presented Krishna consciousness in very simple language, which again highlights the point that Prabhupada's making in one of the purports here about the nature of bhakti, how one doesn't have to be necessarily very qualified to perform bhakti, one just actually have some shraddha, some faith, and that's sufficient. And that's also pointed out in the mantra that's chanted when we wake Lord Nityananda, that actually, you know, he's freely distributing the holy name, and all he asks is the faith, a little bit of faith. So Narottamdas Thakur, he wrote many, many beautiful songs. In the song book, there's many songs from Kirtan, etc. And they're written in a very simple Bengali language. And these songs became very, very popular, and many people were inspired to take up the process of devotional service through Narottamdas Thakur's preaching. A very, very powerful acharya. There's so much you could say about Narottamdas Thakur. And particularly, I find very interesting his disappearance pastimes. Because there's two things that I've read, and some say that it's questionable, so I don't know, you know, I'm not so expert on these things. Yet, I remember reading once that he went into Samadhi, and it appeared that he'd given up his life, and then in the village or in the ashram where he was staying, there were some Mayavadis that were preaching very strongly, and Ganganarayan and Chakravarti and the other disciples couldn't counter what he was saying. And they became very, very disturbed, and they were praying to Narottamdas Thakur. He manifested life again, and then started to preach to these people very strongly. His Brahman thread glowed or something like that. Yeah. And then so he came back to life. And then he remained with his disciples for some time. And then again, you know, I don't have a good memory, so the details are sketchy with me, but sometime later, Ganganarayan Chakravarti and another disciple were bathing Narottamdas Thakur in the Ganges. And he had instructed them, I want you to bathe me in the Ganges. And as they're bathing and pouring the Ganges water over, his body was melting and turning into milk and just flowing away in the Ganges. I remember reading that. It was a very, you know, heart-wrenching account. Because, like, you know, they're saying, well, they're seeing there that I'm bathing my guru and he's melting into the Ganges. But, you know, and they want to stop, but they've been given the instruction. So it's, you know, very amazing pastime there. And you know, also the affinity that Lord Chaitanya had for Narottamdas Thakur when he walked past or came close towards the village where Narottamdas Thakur was to be born into, he called out the name of Narottam. No one understood what was happening there. He also, it's described how he also deposited his prem in the Padma, I think the Padma River. And then when Narottamdas Thakur first bathed in the Padma, then he actually absorbed that prem. So many interesting pastimes that are there, indicating the greatness of Narottamdas Thakur. Also, you know, when he was in Vrindavan being instructed by Jiva Goswami, and then when he came back to Eastern India with the scriptures, with Srinivas and Shamananda, you know, and they lost the scriptures, and then he went off and preached in I guess it's in the area of Manipur. Yeah, so. Yeah, quite amazing pastime. I mean, you could talk so much on that, but I just don't remember it all. Anything else at all? Mahalakshmi Anjali. Microphone.
You were mentioning that it is not possible to describe the Lord with material senses. And 2 days ago we were hearing a very nice description that I like very much, how the pure devotee feels so small because he is in the presence of the Lord. That was like very clear description. And unfortunately, until we don't reach there, there are so many activities that we perform that are not so conducive to advancing in Krishna consciousness. So I just felt that if we could get a clue of that until we reach that state of purity, we cannot put devotees into boxes, that could be helpful for us to advance. And I was willing if you could express something regarding this. Because sometimes we harm ourselves while behaving in this way, immature.
When I was young, I used to read lots of poetry and things like that. And there was one, maybe it was Wordsworth or someone like that. I used to particularly like the English poets. And one of those poets said, which kind of stuck in my mind, of course, I'm not very expert at applying this myself, but it said, best not to judge others, lest you be judged yourself. And so I feel this is a good principle that if we can apply it in devotional service. And in reality, what's our qualification to judge another? Because we ourselves are so full of faults. It's not pleasing to Krishna that we're judging all these other people. It's better and there's another one I remember reading also. And I think this is by an American poet, that if we spent our time looking for our own faults, we'd never have time to find the faults of others. Because we have so many faults, that's our nature. We're full of faults, and that's actually, Kalaya dosha nidhi rajan asti here, but it's an ocean of faults. Dosha nidhi, it's just an ocean. And we're immersed in that ocean. It's not like there's an ocean over there and we're just looking at it. No, we're actually immersed in the ocean. We're swimming in it. And we're relishing it. We're relishing all these different faults. Meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, etc., etc. It just goes on and on. So, I mean, not being practically able to apply this myself. I know that I see the faults of others. I know that I point out the faults of others. Yet, I can only continue to endeavor to overcome this because I know that that's a fault. This fault finding, I know that's a fault, and I know that holds me back in the process of devotional service. Yet, just because we have a fault doesn't mean we should give up. Just because we have a shortcoming doesn't mean we should give up. No, keep trying. It's like, I remember when I was a young boy, I had so many heavy duty accidents on my bicycle. Really, really nasty accident. I got hit by a car, I came off my bike and there's cuts all over, top to bottom. But I still got back on my bicycle and kept riding. It didn't stop me. So it's the same in devotional service. I remember a few years ago that Ravindra Chirupuru gave a really nice class here. And he was making that same point. That we may fall from the process of devotional service. We may actually, break the regular principles. But still, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, keep going. I think that's very, very important. By appreciating the beautiful form of the Lord, by appreciating the beautiful qualities of Krishna, by appreciating the beautiful qualities of Krishna's servants, then we're able to actually give up the attraction to these other things. Because this fault-finding mentality, it's like a fly mentality. A fly is actually going around looking for all these unpleasant things. It goes to stool, it goes to this, it goes to that. Yet, if we're able to spend more time, just like with these beautiful descriptions here, and you see at the end, I believe it, at the end of this chapter also describes about, the benefits of hearing these descriptions, then we give up these different things. We give up these unattractive desires and these inauspicious attractions. This is from Amrita Sakhi Maharaji in Kuala Lumpur. She was one of our students in previous years. Is there a difference between worshipping a picture of Krishna and having deities? Because sometimes devotees say that certain things cannot be offered to the deity, but can be offered to a picture of Krishna. Is it the correct attitude? There's no difference between a picture and a deity, because a picture is a deity. And interestingly enough, in the Catholic Church, if you go to places like Poland, Germany, places like this, I think they're called the... Maybe I'm incorrect in the terminology, but I think they're called iconoclasts, I'm not sure. You'll see that they worship various relics and things like that. Like there's a place in Mexico I went to, in Mexico City, the big Catholic cathedral there. And they have this hand of a saint. It's like preserved, it's all dried out, and they've got it in a mesh thing. Kind of a bit gruesome, but it's a hand of a saint, and they see this as being, you know, directly related to this personality. But also you'll see in some of these places, just like in Cologne, and famously in Częstochowa in Poland, they have the Black Madonna. And also in Cologne, I believe it is, they have this painting of Madonna and the child. And they've got all these, throughout the ages, they've dressed these pictures. You know, so you can even dress a picture. And what they do is they have these dresses made up. They're like a two-dimensional dress, and they have jewels and all sorts of valuable things in the dress. And they actually adorn the picture. And there's all these different eras throughout the ages where they've you know, changed the dress. And they kept the dresses very beautiful, very, very valuable, you know, with gold thread and precious jewels and so many things. And so even their dressing, you know, bathing a picture, you can put a bowl in front of the picture, you can invite the picture into the bowl and just bathe by, you know, different ways you can do it. One way is you pour the water and you look through the water at the deity and it's considered bathing, or you can put a mirror, which they do in Puri. This is called Dharpana Manasasthan or Manasadharpana Stan, like a memory, you know. And you put the picture there, so you can, the mirror, so you can see the deity's picture in the mirror, and you bathe the mirror, so the picture doesn't become damaged. One time I saw a pujari, he was doing this, and he had Jagannath was there, and the mirror was there, and he's looking at his own reflection in the mirror and bathing. So it's actually meant to look at the deity. But, you know, there's no difference. Whatever form, there's actually described in the 11th canto, there's eight different forms of the Lord. And is manifest in jewels, stones, metal, earth, sand, mind, paint. You know, so the paint is also, Prabhupada describes, the paint is also considered the picture. It's like a painting. So yeah, it's the same. And interestingly enough, if one has the consciousness that this is directly Krishna, then you get the same benefit as you would worshipping a deity as directly Krishna. There's no difference. Because, see, the thing is, like, we're limited by form. You know, a material person is not the same as his picture. But Prabhupada clearly explains in a letter that I am non-different from my picture. A spiritual personality is not different from the picture. So if we have that consciousness that, yes, this is directly Krishna, then we get the benefit. However, if we think the picture is different from Krishna, then we don't get any benefit. And actually, it has the opposite effect. So we need to understand that Krishna is not limited by form. He can manifest in any way, shape or form he likes. Just like Jagannath, the story of Jagannath, there's supposedly an incomplete form. Or we see in the Bible, there's a description of how the Lord manifests in a burning bush. And it's not like Krishna's on fire or something. No, he's just manifesting because that's how the believer accepts it. You know, the believer sees his burning bush and, oh, okay, this is God. This is something wonderful. This must be God. You know? So Krishna can manifest in so many different ways and reciprocate with the worshipper in so many different ways. Just like you were quoting that really nice lecture from 1967 or 8 in Los Angeles when Prabhupada installed Rukmini Dwarkanath. And then so Prabhupada, he's describing the appropriate mood of worship. And then at the end of the lecture, he describes how that if we have this mood of worship, one day the deity will talk to you, one day the deity will dance for you. So that stone form, that metal form in that case, can actually talk to you, can dance for you. So he's not limited like that. Okay? I can't.
In the old times, when there was no industrial life, there was not
so much production of forms of Krishna. Like now we see him everywhere on the t-shirts and like stickers here, there, no? So when we see these things, sometimes they are situated in the wrong position. Someone walks over it, or the t-shirt is hanging on a roof upside down. Krishna's head is down. And many things like that, the books. So many books now are circulating. So people don't have proper respect. They put it in their bag, upside down. On the bead bag, they'll keep some picture of Krishna, and then just bump it here and there. So how should we think? Like, we have been instructed by our Guru, don't keep pictures all over the place, don't keep all the walls packed with Krishna's picture. How should we behave? And if we see those pictures and we feel hurt, like we are thinking, oh, this is Krishna, no? And then yeah, now he's treated like that. So how should we?
It's kind of difficult because, you know, you see things like that, yet if you try to correct all these things, it'll either drive you crazy or it'll burn other people out. You know, I remember years ago there was one temple president, and, you know, in his mind people were paying obeisances in the wrong direction. So he actually got up and physically picked the devotees up while they were paying obeisances and turned them around so they're paying obeisances in the right direction. Now that's quite offensive to do something like that. You know, so I mean, there's only so much you can do to change things. And I think that the only person you can really change is yourself. You know, it's like apanichari prabhuji vira sikhaya. First your behavior becomes ideal, then you can preach. So by our ideal behavior, and we see, like Prabhupada in the early days, did he try to change these people that he was preaching to? No. He just carried on with his example of ideal behavior. When people were inspired, just like when he gave the first initiation, you know, and like, you know, half a dozen or a dozen people got initiated, and then afterwards, you know, some of them came to Prabhupada and they said, oh, Prabhupada, well, this actually is called Swamiji. They didn't call him Prabhupada, they said, Swamiji, what does initiation mean? And then Prabhupada said, oh, I was hoping you would ask that. You know, so, and then he actually explained the regular principles to him and things like that. So the point is we need to inspire people through our devotional example, rather than, you know, example is better than precept. Krishnadas Kaviraj says that in the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can give the precept, oh, you should do this and you should do that, and become very, very prescriptive, and people get fried out with you. You know, I think we've all had that example of people just being very heavy and giving us all these rules and regulations. And deity worship is all about rules and regulations. It's the whole thing is rules and regulations, because you have to follow the vidhi before you can achieve the goal. You know, before you actually become purified and actually get to the point of raga, you need to follow vidhi. Yet still, if we're, you know, putting all these rules and regulations on people all the time, you just get fried out. I've seen myself many people leave Krishna consciousness, and one of the causes, or, you know, partial causes, because obviously there's more to it than that, but one of the partial reasons that causes them to leave Krishna consciousness is people just being too heavy on them with all these rules and regulations. And yes, you know, when you go to Vrindavan, you see these men making the deities, and they're holding Radha around his face with their big toe and stuff like that. It's like disturbing, because I see the deity even though it's incomplete, and I see this is a form of Krishna. Yet, that's their worship. Janakaraswami explains, that's their worship of that form. That's how they're worshipping the form, is by making the form, and they're chipping with a chisel and filing with a file and polishing that. That's their worship. And the deity is accepting that worship in that way. Because that's the nature of Krishna. What's that term? Yeah, bhava grahi janardana, that he accepts the worship according to the nature of the worship, according to the mood of the worshipper, according to the bhava. He can accept in so many different ways. So, of course, when people are doing, you know, like, even like I've seen, you know, congregational people come and we give them a song book, we're singing some bhajan, you give them a song book, they put the song book on the floor. You know, I mean, you're going to try and change everything. You can't possibly change everything wrong. You know, it's just like in India, you know, it's like, boy, it's frustrating in this country sometimes, you know, just the things that people do, but, you know, there's a billion Indians, what are you going to do about it? And they just, I think tolerance is also there, and set a good example yourself for other devotees to follow. That's what I try. Don't always achieve it, as you probably noticed, but I try. No, Chinnanivas is the expert on deity worship, I follow his example. It's not turned on. I know more about sound systems than I know about deity worship.
Minor detail. In the beginning, in the earlier days when Srila Prabhupada installed deities and taught deity worship to his disciples, it wasn't so complicated. There weren't so many rules. Like if we see the installation of the different deities, it was actually very, very simple. So I've always had this question in my mind, why are things becoming more complicated?
Because of the nature of the worshippers, they're complicated. Therefore, they have to make it complicated in order to be satisfied. The thing is, what I encourage with deity worship is when devotees are establishing standards of worship, I encourage them to keep it as simple as possible. Just, you know, bare basics, because many reasons. One reason is as Kali Yuga progresses, it's becoming more and more difficult to maintain deity worship. And everywhere I go, I see the same problem, lack of cleanliness. And that's the thing that Prabhupada stressed more than anything else. Cleanliness and punctuality. He said, unless we're very, very attentive to cleanliness and punctuality, there will be some offense. You know, he said, if we're always careful with punctuality and cleanliness, Krishna will be happy to accept our offerings. So we can imply the inverse, that if we're not careful, he won't accept our offerings. So I see that devotees, generally speaking, it's not, I don't want to be a broad generalization, but generally speaking, we see that in most places, devotees are getting caught up in the ritual and forgetting the principle behind it all. What are we dealing with? We're dealing with the Supreme Pure here. Prabhupada points out in the fourth canto, in order to approach the Supreme Pure, we have to become pure. So these are the things we need to focus on. And you see generally where they become caught up in the ritual, it's more that they're more concerned with the, I was discussing with my wife the other day, she's working on a devotee care presentation. And we're seeing that people get all caught up in the delivery method, you know, of the, you know, they've got to have all the technology to present them the seminar, yet the message is lost. So it's the same in deity worship. It's like we have to avoid this tendency, niyamagraha. We get caught up in the ritual and forget the purpose behind the ritual. The purpose, the ritual is the vehicle of our devotion. So if we're just caught up in the ritual and we're forgetting that actually this is my offering of devotion to Krishna, the Supreme Person, the Supreme Pure, then it's lost. And that often happens. So I encourage devotees to focus on the simplicity of deity worship. Keep everything very, very clean. Prabhupada said in a letter to Shilavati, who was the first real pujari in ISKCON, he said, the idea is summit cleanliness. That will satisfy Krishna. So summit, as we understand it, is the top of the mountain. You're on the summit, you can't go any higher. So if you get it to the point where you can't make it any cleaner, that's pleasing to Krishna. Not ritual. He's not inspired by the ritual.
I was thinking of the installation ceremonies.
Yeah.
Installation ceremony.
But just like you look at the installation ceremony we had here for the Panchatattva, it's probably the most elaborate and opulent ritual you've ever seen in deity worship, or has ever been done in deity worship in Kali Yuga. You know, more than 5,000 litres of fluids were poured over the Panchatattva. The ceremony took an hour and three quarters. Look at the worship that's going on now. Beautiful worship, and everything's very clean, because you know Janivas has bhakti. He has it. He wants to, you know. And you don't see elaborate ritual. You know, you go on the altar here and you see, like, you know, Janivas trained me in worshiping Prabhupada and Gaur Nitai, and it's very simple. You basically just bathe and dress the deities. You know, and all the worship here is like that. But the other point that I was going to make, he leaves that scope there, that if the pujaris want to offer more elaborate worship, the space is there. They can, you know, the facility is there. They can offer the 16 items of worship if they want to. But of course, with the Shalagram, then daily 16 items of worship are there, because that was Prabhupada's instruction. And in that verse 7.5.23.24, he translates Archana as worship of Sodas with Chava, 16 items. So, yeah. Keep it simple. I mean, you can do elaborate rituals. It's very nice to attract people. They see these elaborate rituals and stuff like that. You know, people doing, you know, what do you call them, mudras and things like that, and very fancy things. This attracts the mind of people. The opulence attracts people. The beautiful decoration attracts people. But still, we've got to focus on the basics. That's where the focus needs to be. Now, I could talk about deity worship for quite a while, but I won't. Because Rajendranandan will.
Thank you very much.
Very much.
This would have been, it's a carry on with the question from the internet and the, I think some discussion afterwards, but you focused in on the sameness of the picture and the deity form. But sometimes we hear Janani Vas Prabhu say, well, the temple worship and the home worship, there's difference there. So isn't it that sometimes there is recognized, maybe it's because it's in the home, that there's a difference between the picture and the deity? And as such, that was what her original question. If you get a little more slack, not that that's an excuse not to be devotional, but is that an aspect of the understanding of deity worship?
It's, as with practically every aspect of our philosophy, it's a Chitta Veda Tattva. They're simultaneously one and different. The picture is Krishna, there's no doubt of that. Same as the deity is Krishna, if you have the consciousness. If you don't have the consciousness, it's just a stone. And one person can see the picture as directly Krishna, whereas another person can see the deity as stone. The difference between home worship and temple worship essentially is in the home worship, this was described by Bhakti Prakar Keshav Maharaj in the original introduction to the Archana Parati. In home worship, the worship is based around the needs of the family. Whereas in temple worship, the worship is based around the needs of the deity. So you see a very, very strict ritual. Srila Prabhupada said in a letter that the worship of the deity in the home is identical to the worship of the deity in the temple. And I understand that to mean that one's conscience must be that this is Krishna. Not that, because he's at my home, he's one of my friends, and I can just be, disrespectful, etc. like that, No, one has to understand that the deity is directly Krishna. Because only when we have that understanding do we get the benefit. If we think it's some representational thing, like the common one that's getting around these days, it's been for a few years now, is like, we won't install the deities, we'll just stick them up on the altar, therefore we don't have a commitment. Okay, if that's what you do, who is this that you're playing with here? Is this Krishna? Or is it just some statue? What's your concept of installation? Some person's concept of installation is we call the Lord into the form. If that's your concept, and this is a fairly wide, I say some person's because there are different concepts and I don't really buy into any of them yet. I'm not sort of convinced which one's correct. Because there's different understandings there. And I can see truth in all of them. If your concept is that when you install the deity, you're inviting Krishna to come and be in that form, you don't do that, what are you worshipping? You're worshipping a statue, therefore it's idolatry, therefore it's aparad. Prabhupada said in a letter that if we don't very carefully follow the rules and regulations of deity worship, then it's idolatry. So if we put the deity on the altar, we don't have an installation, and the reason devotees do that is because they don't want to make a commitment. But a deity means a commitment. If you have a three-dimensional deity, it means commitment. It's just the same as, anyone who's a mother here. You have a child, it means commitment. If you don't take up the commitment, they take the child from you and put you in jail. So deity is the same. Krishna's not going to put you in jail, but you're going to get reactions. Yeah? So it means commitment. So that's why I encourage devotees to have a picture, because there's less commitment. Yeah? With a deity, there's a commitment of worship. You cannot go back on that. But if you have a picture, then there's no solid commitment like that. That's the only difference, really, is the degree of commitment.
What's that term Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur used, using the shallow ground to crack the nuts? What was that? Do you remember that big
one? I've forgotten it. I know the term, but I've forgotten it.
And the last thing, a little more costly, frivolous, but he said, if you had the devotion of Raghunandan, then he will leave the prasad, just like he did for Raghunandan. When you said that, I was thinking, thank God. Evidently, we're going to leave. the inverse, our pujaris don't have that devotion, and so thank goodness we get some Mahavishnu.
No, I mean, my experience, as you probably would be aware, I've met lots of pujaris, and some of the pujaris I've met, I'm just, to use an English expression, I'm gobsmacked by their devotion. I'm just like astounded. There's one Mataji in Ukraine, I think it's Ukraine, it was years ago I met her, her name's Kunti, possibly. Just astounded by her devotion to the deities. You know, when I witnessed Janani Masakura doing worship, it's kind of interesting, I wanted to, several years ago, I wanted to make a video of Janani Mas doing Shalagram worship. And I put the proposal to him, and he didn't say anything later. 3 days later, Nitai Balaram got the flu. So for 5 days, Janani Masakura was worshipping Shalagram. And I videotaped it every day. So we're almost to the point of releasing it. Just got a few more edits to make, and then we'll be able to release that. But, you know, so... And I saw his devotion, the way you can see, you know, like he offers the comb to the Lord, combs his hair. Even though he's a Shalagram, he's still combing his hair. So you can see, he's dealing with him as a person, you know. And many, many pujaris I've seen around the world, I see they have that devotion. They have genuine devotion. They see Krishna as a person. But I see rather that that's Krishna's kindness upon us as he leaves the prasadam there. He takes it and he leaves it behind. Therefore it's prasad, it's mercy. Speaking of prasad, Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Hidi Samaventa Bhaktivindiki Jainitai Gopremanandi.